Hi, this is CJ Wilson for the Green Bay Packers, and you listen to Railbird Central.
Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu, joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're talking pro days. We're talking NFL draft prospects on today's show. To do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone. We have a friend of mine. We have Scott McKenna. He's from Denver. Scott, how you doing this morning?
I'm great, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Scott is a buddy of mine. We're taking kind of an informal approach to today's show. Two buddies talking NFL draft prospects. If it wasn't so early in the morning, this might be considered kind of barstool talk, drinking over beers. I'm not sure I can do that at 8:30 a.m. Central Time here. But I really respect Scott's keen eye for talent. And the way players fit into the Packers system. So we're just going to talk NFL pro days and things like that. And I got to tell you, Scott was one of the first people in my ear about Washington State safety Dayone Buchanan. He was telling me back during the season, in season, before the All-Star games, before the combine, this guy's good. Watch him. What do you think of him? So, Scott, what I want you to do here, tell me, what did you see in Dayone Buchanan?
Well, it's funny, living out in Pac-12 land and originally being a Big Ten guy, you know, you get comfortable watching the players that you're exposed to most. And last year, in actually the 2012 season, I was flipping through Oregon prospects and was watching the Oregon Washington State game, and Buchanan picked off two passes, and it was the first time I took note of him. So this year, much to maybe my wife's chagrin, I put every Washington State game on the college football package that was televised. I was DVRing it, and I just saw a guy that, you know, he reminded me of Brian Dawkins. And Dawkins was always a guy that seemed to be a thorn in the Packers' side, who, you know, he definitely has limitations of being able to he's not going to be a guy who's going to come up and guard a receiver out of the slot. I think that's one of the first things that people can think about is they look at a guy's weaknesses. But with Buchanan, what I saw is the type of guy that could make a similar impact to the defense that Eddie Lacy did to the offense. And I think this year what was exciting about the Packer offense was that we really saw a change of the aura inside the huddle of that offense. They became more physical. They became more tough. And I thought we needed the same thing on the defensive side of the ball. I believe Buchanan's that type of guy. He's not just a guy that is looking to make a tackle. He's looking to inflict pain. He's looking to slap wrists and knock the ball loose. He gets sideline to sideline. He can step in the box. And then one of the other challenges that I know you're adamant about as well is, you know, the Packers' safety play, especially when they go to zone defenses, has just been so questionable. And if you look back at a lot of Buchanan's interceptions, they come when they're in a zone defense. And he's reading plays well, and that's one of the things that really jumped out at me from the start.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. At the NFL Combine, I went and asked Dayone Buchanan about that Oregon game in 2012 where he picked off Marcus Mariota two times, both those coming in zone coverage. He just undercuts the receiver and steps right in front of the pass. And what I think is especially impressive, Marcus Mariota is a guy who is known for taking care of the football. He just doesn't throw interceptions. So this was all on Dayone Buchanan reading the play in front of him. And for his book, I mean, we're sitting here talking about Dayone Buchanan, his coverage abilities. And I think that's what makes him so impressive to us, because everybody else is talking about how hard of a hitter he is. And he is, but I think his coverage skills are really underrated.
Totally agree. And you know, the other exciting thing is when you put him in back in the proverbial center field, he can, you know, he covers so much ground. And you know, I was curious to see how he would run the 40. And, you know, he surprised me at his speed and, you know, from a track perspective. But I also think that kind of talks about who he is as a man. You know, you can, when you condition yourself to perform in front of scouts, I think you can really make a difference on, you know, in your 40 time, if that's what you're practicing for. And it looks like he really committed himself, you know, from the end of the college season to being prepared to be able to run the 40 and to shine. And to my eye, and I think to most scouts, he clearly did.
We're just going to run through some prospects here today. I know another guy you're interested in, Scott, you like, is Texas A&M wide receiver Mike Evans. Now, I went to the NFL Combine, learned that Mike Evans has been working out with former Packers legend James Lofton, kind of in the run-up to the draft. Here's a guy who's in that mold of the tall wide receiver, a guy who's kind of been compared to Calvin Johnson, to Brandon Marshall of the Bears. What are your thoughts on Mike Evans and what he brings to the NFL?
You know, when I look at the prospects in the draft this year, I really have a hard time finding 5 to 7 players that I would consider to be more of a can't-miss prospect than him. 6'5", is what I think he is. I think he's over 230 pounds. He ran the 4.5s, low 4.5s, and the 40. And the thing that's ultra impressive is that he had a 37-inch vertical leap. Guy makes plays in traffic, can get deep, runs a good out route, and then when he catches the ball, he's tough to bring down. And when you look at this era of the NFL, where the rules are really tailored to two receivers, you know, this is in with the high frequency and volume that people are throwing the football this day, he just really comes to me as a guy that is going to make an immediate impact in the NFL. Another thing that's funny, Brian, and you know, you do such an awesome job of covering the NFL draft, but people can oftentimes be enamored with, okay, what did they run the 40 and how did they do with the combine and in pro days and whatnot. But what I like to do is I like to look at how somebody performed when the lights were on. When they were in front of a national audience, how did somebody step up? And, you know, you look at what Evans did against Alabama, Bama, and Auburn, and he had 18 catches. I think he had over 560 yards and 5 TDs in those 2 games. You know, those are the games. If I'm a scout and I'm looking to find a guy who's going to make an immediate impact and can perform against top-level talent, I definitely see Evans as a guy that's going to step in and make a difference if he falls to the right team. I think the Giants would be a great team for him. They've got a system that is proven for people of that size and speed. If you look at guys like Burris and Akeem Nix, I think Evans sort of fits there too. Would love if he would fall into our lap, but I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I think it would be great if Evans would fall to the 21st overall pick, and I think he almost becomes a no-brainer if he'd be available. But yeah, I don't think he'll fall that far either. And you know, you talk about performing in the bright light. Mike Evans sometimes was very much a product of Johnny Manziel's playmaking ability. He gets outside the pocket. He just heaved it up at times. But Evans has the ability to go out and grab that pass, outleap defenders. And yeah, I mean, the guy's a talent. But kind of moving on here. Just yesterday, the University of Nebraska held their pro day, and one of their top players, their top prospects, is cornerback Stanley Jean-Baptiste. And this guy's kind of in the mold of the new breed of tall cornerbacks that you especially saw in Seattle, the Legion of Boom, Richard Sherman, guys who are 6'3" for cornerbacks. What do you see out of Stanley Jean-Baptiste, and can he be one of these guys? Does he have the speed at 6'3" to be a good NFL corner?
You know, that's a great question, and I really see him as being different than the Brandon Bronners and the Richard Shermans and the players that have been, you know, 6'3", 210 plus, and have made they've changed the NFL in what is a copycat league. If Ted Thompson does see him as a guy that has the speed, I certainly hope he steals the thoughts of his pupil, right? But you know, when I look at John Brettis, I see him as a guy that, you know, he's really going to be scheme specific. I see him being a fit for, you know, a cover two defense or someone where you're really going to be pressing at the line of scrimmage. He's got a great vertical, but I do question his speed, and I question his quickness at the line of scrimmage. You know, I think he can be beat on double moves, and I think with the Packers system and the way that they can sometimes leave their guys alone on the outside, I'd be scared to see him, you know, as a fit for the way that Don Capers has us currently set up. Don't get me wrong, I like him. I think if he falls into the right scheme, I think he could be a real good player. But I'm not positive the Packers are the right fit for him. Another thing that was interesting to me when you really look at him as a prospect, you oftentimes hear analysts talk about how productive he was, you know, in limited playing time. I think he was only with them for 2 years, with Nebraska for 2 years. The last year, while he had 4 interceptions, none of them came in the Big Ten. So a lot of his interceptions came against, you know, I know he picked off Smith from Wyoming, but he picked off, Indy had an interception against UCLA, but he was picking off passes against smaller schools. So, you know, again, when I come back to how are people playing when the lights are on and is that when they're making their big plays, you know, I didn't see that from him in the limited video I watched of him, but, you know, again, I like him as a prospect, just not sure that he's a fit for the Packers.
Today's Pro Day circuit includes Arizona State, Ohio State. We're going to talk about some of these guys. Out in Arizona State, there's a guy I know you like, Scott. His name's Carl Bradford, an outside linebacker for the Sun Devils. Now, kind of the thing about Bradford is he's 6'1", which is kind of short for, you know, the NFL, you know, 3-4 outside linebacker hybrid, but a playmaker. You know, what's the story on him? Can he make it at his size?
You know, I think the people are questioning his height. People are questioning his arm length, right? Those seem to be the two things that people are considering to be significant weaknesses. You know, when I watch Bradford, I one of the things that I really like is we consistently pursue people who fit into a 3-4 defense at the outside linebacker position. No more of this trying to convert 4-3 ends like Aaron Campman or Nick Perry or Mike Neal into a 3-4 defense where they get exposed in playing in spades. I like to watch, you know, the way somebody gets off the ball at the line of scrimmage, and are they equally as comfortable standing up as they are when their hand is in the dirt? And I believe Bradford's that kind of guy. And I like how he was interchanged and moving from both the right and the left side. I think that would be great creativity, allow for great creativity for Capers. I also like how Bradford chases down plays at the line of scrimmage. And you know, if the play is on the backside, that's where he's almost most effective. And we've begun really enamored with the plays that Matthews has made for the Packers over the last couple of years when the play is on the backside and he chases it down. And I see a lot of that in Bradford as well. You know, when you watch the Stanford game in the Pac-12 championship, and if you watch Bradford is attacked, he does have limitations, absolutely, when somebody's running right at him. But if the play gets stretched to the outside, I really see him as making good, recognizing the play well. He's able to separate from a bigger tackle or tight end even, and he's been able to stretch plays out and make the tackle. Additionally, one of the things that really impressed me is at the end of games, you know, when teams needed to get off, or when Arizona State needed to get off the field to seal games, maybe with the exception of the way the Wisconsin game ended against Arizona State. But what I liked about Bradford is he was the guy making plays. he was the guy disrupting passes or getting to the quarterback and coming through with a big sack that sort of sealed the game. If we look at the Packers over the last couple of years, you know, we've struggled to finish games defensively in the fourth quarter. So, you know, that's again one of those things that I look for in prospects is, you know, are they making plays late with the game on the line? And Bradford has consistently done that.
Also today, Ohio State's pro day. A guy like Bradley Roby, cornerback, will be in the spotlight today, running his 40. Well, maybe not. Maybe he'll choose not to run and stand on his combine numbers. We'll find out. But anyway, talking about Bradley Roby, one of Ohio State's better prospects this year, you know, being here in Wisconsin, you hear a lot about his game covering Jared Abradaris, and he gave up so much that game. You wonder, what Bradley Roby are you going to see? Are you going to see the aggressive guy who's a real hard hitter and a good player? Are you going to see the guy that gave up tons of yards to Wisconsin and Jared Abradaris? Where do you fall, Scott?
That's the struggle. You know, the Badger fan in me says the first thing I think of, when Roby's name comes to mind is Abradaris at the horseshoe grabbing 10 balls, right? Like, I think he put up over 200 yards that day as well. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. But, the other thing that I can't escape is, don't you feel, and maybe it's just the helmet that he's wearing at the college level, but don't you see a lot of Antoine Winfield in Roby, but Roby just being a little taller and maybe being a little faster as well? Do you think I'm inaccurate there in saying that?
No, I mean, I see a guy who's really ultra aggressive and probably one of the best guys who plays the run from this year's class of cornerbacks. I see that in Roby, definitely. That's one of his positives that he brings to the game. Maybe not the coverage skills of a Justin Gilbert, but there are other things he brings to the table.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because as I look at this draft, and I'm alone here, but I would not be disappointed if the Packers drafted their first two picks in the secondary. I think that's just we need people who are going to be hard hitting, who are going to be aggressive, and who are going to be firm tacklers. And I really see Roby as a guy who fits that mold. I question his durability with his size and his tough-minded nature. And then I also question his coverage skills as well. So while he certainly has the mindset that I really hope the Packers continue to move towards, I'm not certain that he's a fit for the Packers cover scheme as well. For what that's worth.
Scott, before we let you go here, I got to ask you about your reaction to yesterday's news about B.J. Raji. Kind of came out of nowhere. The Packers reportedly offering a one-year deal worth about $4 million. This isn't official, and we don't know if it's going to become official. Raji may very well choose to test the open waters of free agency, but what was your reaction to hearing the news, and what do you think's going to happen?
The first thing I think of with B.J. Raji is what happened. It seemed like we moved his position around, and if any time you go back and watch the highlights of 2010, or I encourage any Packer fan who spits fire at B.J. Raji to take a look at B.J. Raji against the New York Giants in Week 16 at Lambeau Field. And I think one of the biggest pains that has happened with Raji is they moved him from a playmaking position to a guy who ate up space. And, I would be absolutely stoked to get Raji back in a short-term deal where he had to be ultra-motivated to extend himself into a long-term deal, whether it's with the Packers or somebody else. One of the conditions I would like to see, attached to that is that, the Packers would have to go out and, be it via be it via free agency or the draft, they need to get a big, beefy, body eating guy, and Siragi can be next to him. And I think he'd complement Mike Daniels very, very well as far as that, you know, thicker, athletic, quick guy that can pursue quarterbacks. And I really wondered why that change happened. I think of how valuable Raji was during our XOV title run. And you look at the guys he had lined up next to him and how Capers was married to that big, beefy formation with Howard Green, Raji, and Pickett. And because of that, it looked like Raji looked like he was going to become the next superstar defensive lineman. Ever since then, it hasn't been the case. And I wonder if that's Raji or I wonder if that's us from a scheme perspective. I look at the Raji news as if we can get him back, I think it would be a really exciting thing to have back in our. He'd be an exciting player to have back in our repertoire. And I just really would be more focused then on how are we using Raji and are we using his talents to the best of his abilities.
Great stuff, Scott. I mean, we could sit here and talk forever as far as I'm concerned, but we're running out of time here. And someday I think I got to get you back on. You got to tell us your connection to the Packers, your family's connection. But I'm not going to let you tell it now because we're going to have you back on the show to do that sometime.
I'd be excited to, brother. It's good to catch up with you once again, man.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you later, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Brian.
All right. Scott McKenna, BuzzBoy3 on Twitter. BuzzBoy3 if you want to follow him. I know Scott loves to talk about the NFL draft, and you can really tell that. You can get that impression from just hearing him talk on the show today, and it's a blast to hear him talk about it and just sit here and talk NFL prospects with him. But to kind of conclude the show today about this BJ Raji news and here we are on a Friday. It's March 7th. Today is the last day for exclusive negotiating rights. Starting Saturday, March 8th, that 3-day window opens in which what happens, teams can start negotiating or players can start negotiating with other NFL teams, just negotiate for 3 days, and then March 11th they can actually start signing contracts. So today's the last day the Packers can speak to Raji and be the only one to speak to BJ Raji and not just him but all 17 of their unrestricted free agents, and of course, obviously, they're not going to sign all 17 of them. I think we know guys like Seneca Wallace, Khalil Bell. Those guys are probably not coming back. But I mean, there's going to be a lot of interest here in what happens to those other guys, though. Talk about James Jones, Evan Dietrich Smith, Mike Neal, James Starks, John Kuhn, Sam Shields. The list goes on here. What's going to happen to these guys? But no matter what happens, today's the last day the Packers and only the Packers can talk to them. Starting tomorrow, starting Saturday, these guys are going to go out and they're going to start negotiating with other teams. And I think that's going to end up being what Raji does. Is I think there's maybe kind of a standing offer here to him for this 1 year, $4 million deal that Raji can always come back to if he doesn't find out his interest is what, you know, he hoped for on the free agent market. Or maybe it's just the fact that, you know, maybe there's another team offering a 2-year deal, but maybe he doesn't want to take a 2-year deal. He wants a 1 year so he can hit free agency again next year. He's banking on maybe having a big year, you know, improving his stock and then going out and making the big bucks. So I think that's what you're going to see happen here. Not that BJ Raji is outright, you know, rejecting the Packers offer. He's just going to find out what else is out there first. And hey, maybe if he finds a nice long-term deal, if there's someone, some team out there willing to take a chance on the 9th overall draft choice from years past,
you know, and see the guy that, you know, was talented enough to take ninth overall. Who knows? Maybe he takes that deal. It's hard to say after such a poor season in 2013 what the market's going to be for BJ Raji. I'm certainly have nothing against this one-year deal that is for a very, you know, a relatively modest amount when you're talking about a former first-round draft choice. It's very much a prove-it deal. You know, Raji goes out and you hope he's motivated. I've heard some people say, well, heck, this past year was a contract year. If he wasn't motivated this past year, what's going to change? Well, I don't know. Maybe the light comes on. Maybe it clicks for BJ Raji. But on top of that, they're talking about moving him back more so to this nose tackle spot that he hasn't really played very much the past few years. It's been more Ryan Pickett manning that nose tackle spot, and maybe it's different now. Maybe BJ Raji's going to go back to where he played, you know, as Scott said, pretty much where he played that Super Bowl XLV year, the 2010 season, where he did so well and was a playmaker and had, I think, 7.5 sacks that season when you include the playoffs. I mean, that just doesn't happen for nose tackles. Nose tackles don't get 7.5 sacks in a season. And to see Raji do that year, I mean, you really thought this was a guy on the rise and a guy who's going to take over and maybe even revolutionize the position in the NFL, being just his second year. Well, it's been all downhill from there. And it's not just scheme. No doubt about it. I'm not making excuses here for Raji. Some of it's on him as well. I mean, when you're out on the field for darn near, you know, what was he out there? 800 plays, 900 plays, and you're not making them. Well, I mean, some of that falls on you. There are ample chances to take advantage of opportunities, and Raji didn't always take advantage of them this past season. So, I mean, last day here to exclusively negotiate with the Packers for these players. I see the talk on the live blog, Alex Talich chiming in on Jermichael Finley, him as well. I missed him before. There's so many ways this whole offseason can go for the Packers with Finley and his injury. Packers reportedly negotiating with free agent tight end to be Andrew Corliss. But nothing finalized there either. So the tight end position, very much in flux. And then we hear reports the Packers are interested in free agent tight end John Carlson. They're interested in Garrett Graham. What's going to happen at that tight end position? You know, are the Packers looking for kind of a number two, number three tight end? And how are they going to fill the number one tight end position? Is it still possible Finley comes back? Is it possible the Packers go after a tight end high in the NFL draft? I mean, so much is up in the air. And really, I mean, I don't have a crystal ball. You know, I can sit here and make predictions about these guys, but I really don't. There's so many coin flips this year, really. So many coin flips as to will guys come back or won't they? I mean, BJ Raji, Sam Shields, Jermichael Finley, Andrew Corliss, John Kuhn. I mean, seriously, it's looking heads or tails. I mean, with some people, it's looking more likely they leave than not. I mean, with Sam Shields, I'd be inclined to say he's not coming back to the Packers, but I'm not ruling that out by any means. With a guy like John Kuhn, I'd say it's more likely he does come back to the Packers. But the simple fact that he's making it to free agency without a deal being done, I mean, he's going to try to, you know, maximize his value, what it is, try to find a team that needs a fullback out there. So that there's no guarantees about free agency and what's coming up. And all 17 of these guys that the Packers have leaving, make it 19 if the Packers don't make any qualifying offers to their restricted free agents. Jamari Lattimore and MB Jennings here, they got until free agency starts March 11th to do that. So a whole lot's going to happen over the course of the next few days. It is going to be filled with free agency news and things like that. And so that'll be interesting to follow that as we go along. Interesting to follow what's going on with pro days and the NFL draft. We'll be doing all that as time goes on here at Cheesehead TV and Railbird Central. But that'll do it for today's show. Thanks to Scott McKenna, as I said, BuzzBoy3 on Twitter. Give him a follow. Thanks to Scott for joining us. We'll be back on Monday, as we are every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time here at Cheesehead TV. Watch us on TV via your Roku player, via the live stream platform. Check us out on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called Rosie by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. Go Pack, go.